Tonight, we slip into the shadows of a quiet Canadian suburb where a single night in 1987 unraveled into a mystery that defies reason. A young man, lost in the depths of sleep, became the center of a haunting enigma, one that whispers questions about the mind's hidden paths. Curl up, let the darkness soften, and follow us into a tale where dreams and reality intertwine. Welcome to True Crime Sleep Stories, where we weave tales of mystery and intrigue to guide you gently into slumber. Each episode is crafted to captivate your mind while soothing you into a restful state, perfect for drifting off under the covers. Before we dive into tonight's story, a quick announcement. CrimeCon is coming soon, September 5th through the 7th in Denver, Colorado. It's your chance to connect with true crime enthusiasts, experts, and storytellers. Use the code BRINK, that's B-R-I-N-K, to get your discounted tickets at crimecon.com. Now, dim the lights, pull up your blanket, and let's step into the strange world of Kenneth Parks. Picture a quiet spring night in Pickering, Ontario, May 23, 1987. The suburban streets are still, bathed in the soft glow of streetlights. Families are tucked into bed, the world hushed under a blanket of stars. In one modest home, 23-year-old Kenneth Parks sleeps beside his wife, their infant daughter resting peacefully nearby. The house is calm, the only sounds the gentle hum of a distant car or the rustle of leaves in the breeze. But beneath this tranquil scene, something extraordinary is about to unfold. A story that will challenge what we believe about sleep, consciousness, and responsibility. Kenneth Parks was an ordinary young man living a life much like those around him. Born in 1964, he grew up in the Toronto suburbs, a place of tidy lawns and close-knit communities. By his early 20s, he was married to his high school sweetheart, Karen, and they welcomed a daughter in 1986. Kenneth worked as a machine operator, a steady, if unremarkable, job, and was known for his easygoing nature. To those who knew him, he was a devoted husband, a doting father, and a man who cherished his family, especially his in-laws, Barbara and Dennis Woods, who lived 14 miles away in Scarborough. Barbara, in her early 40s, was a warm, maternal figure who treated Kenneth like a son. Dennis, a reserved but kind man, shared a quiet bond with his son-in-law. The couple often hosted Kenneth and Karen for dinners, their Scarborough home filled with laughter and the clink of dishes. But beneath Kenneth's cheerful exterior, cracks were forming. By 1987, he was grappling with mounting stress. He'd lost his job due to downsizing, and his attempts to start a small business had faltered. Worse, Kenneth had developed a gambling habit, dipping into his savings to play the horses at Woodbine Racetrack. To cover his losses, he began siphoning money from his family's savings, a secret that weighed heavily on his conscience. Compounding his troubles was a battle with insomnia. Kenneth had always been a restless sleeper, prone to tossing and turning, but the stress of his financial woes made it worse. He'd lie awake at night, his mind racing, while Karen slept soundly beside him. Occasionally, he'd sleepwalk, wandering the house in a daze, unaware of his actions until morning. These episodes were harmless, even humorous at times, like when Karen found him rearranging kitchen chairs in the middle of the night. But no one could have predicted how these quirks of sleep would lead to one of the most bizarre cases in Canadian legal history. On the night of May 23, 1987, Kenneth went to bed as usual. The day had been unremarkable, a mix of caring for his daughter, worrying about money, and planning a visit to his in-laws the next day for a family barbecue. Around midnight, he fell into a fitful sleep. The house grew quiet, the world outside cloaked in darkness. What happened next defies easy explanation. At some point in the early hours, Kenneth rose from his bed. He didn't wake, didn't stir, didn't speak. In a trance-like state, he slipped on his shoes, grabbed his car keys, and left the house. He climbed into his car, a modest sedan, and drove 14 miles through the quiet streets of suburban Toronto. The route was familiar. He'd driven it countless times to visit Barbara and Dennis. But this journey was different. His eyes were open, his hands steady on the wheel. Yet his mind, according to later testimony, was submerged in the depths of sleep. He arrived at the Woods home in Scarborough, a tidy bungalow much like his own. The neighborhood was silent, the houses dark. Kenneth entered through an unlocked door, carrying a tire iron from his car. Inside, the home was still, the air heavy with the stillness of night. Barbara and Dennis were asleep in their bedroom, unaware of the figure moving through their home. What followed was a burst of violence that seemed to erupt from nowhere. Kenneth attacked Barbara, striking her with the tire iron and later a kitchen knife. She succumbed to her injuries, her life slipping away in the quiet of her own home. Dennis, woken by the commotion, was strangled but survived, left gasping and injured as Kenneth fled. Covered in blood, Kenneth drove to a nearby police station. It was around 4:30 a.m. when he stumbled through the doors, his hands trembling, his face pale. "I think I've killed some people," he said to the startled officers, his voice thick with confusion. "My hands." He held them up as if seeing the blood for the first time. He seemed dazed, disoriented, unable to explain what had happened. The officers, initially skeptical, noted his genuine bewilderment. He didn't resist, didn't flee. He simply sat, staring blankly, as if waking from a dream he couldn't comprehend. The investigation began immediately. Detectives arrived at the Woods home, where they found a scene of shocking violence. Barbara's body lay in the bedroom, the evidence of the attack stark and undeniable. Dennis, recovering in the hospital, recounted what little he could remember: a shadowy figure, sudden pain, and then darkness. The police traced the trail back to Kenneth, whose car was parked outside the station, bloodstains on the seats. But as they questioned him, something didn't add up. Kenneth wasn't a violent man. He had no criminal record, no history of aggression. His love for Barbara and Dennis was well known. Why would he attack them? As the case unfolded, a startling possibility emerged. Kenneth's lawyer, Marlis Edward, a seasoned defense attorney, proposed a defense almost unheard of in criminal law. Kenneth had been sleepwalking. He wasn't conscious, wasn't aware, wasn't in control. The idea seemed outlandish. How could someone drive 14 miles, enter a home, and commit such acts while asleep? But as experts were called in, the case took a surreal turn. Dr. Roger Broughton, a renowned sleep specialist at the University of Ottawa, examined Kenneth. He conducted EEG tests, which revealed abnormal brain activity consistent with severe parasomnia, a disorder involving unusual behaviors during sleep. Kenneth's history of sleepwalking, combined with his insomnia and stress, supported the diagnosis. During non-REM sleep, Dr. Broughton explained, a person can perform complex actions, walking, driving, even cooking, while their conscious mind remains offline. These actions, known as automatisms, are involuntary, like a machine operating without a pilot. The prosecution was skeptical. They argued Kenneth's actions were too deliberate, too precise. Driving a car, navigating traffic, using a tire iron, and knife. These weren't the clumsy stumbles of a sleepwalker, they contended. Perhaps Kenneth was faking it, or perhaps his stress had driven him to a moment of rage he now claimed to forget. But the defense countered with compelling evidence. Witnesses, including Karen, confirmed Kenneth's sleepwalking episodes. Medical records showed his insomnia had worsened in the months leading up to the crime, and crucially, Kenneth had no motive. His relationship with Barbara and Dennis was loving, not strained. The trial, which began in 1988, was a media sensation. Reporters packed the Toronto courtroom, eager to hear about the sleepwalking killer. The public was divided. Some saw Kenneth as a victim of his own mind, others as a man exploiting a loophole to escape justice. The defense called a parade of experts, from neurologists to psychologists, who explained the science of parasomnia. They described how stress, sleep deprivation, and even genetics could trigger sleepwalking episodes. In Kenneth's case, the perfect storm of financial pressure, insomnia, and guilt over his gambling had likely pushed his brain into a state where such an episode could occur. The prosecution, meanwhile, leaned on common sense. They pointed to the complexity of Kenneth's actions, driving, entering the house, wielding weapons, as evidence of intent. They suggested he might have been awake, driven by some unconscious resentment or momentary lapse. But they struggled to find a motive. Why would a man with no history of violence, who loved his in-laws, suddenly turn on them? The absence of a clear reason bolstered the defense's case. In May 1988, the jury delivered a stunning verdict. Not guilty. Kenneth Parks was acquitted of both murder and attempted murder, the court accepting that he was in a state of non-insane automatism during the crime. The decision was controversial, sparking debates about whether sleepwalking could truly absolve someone of such a serious act. The prosecution appealed, and the case climbed to the Supreme Court of Canada. In 1992, the higher court upheld the acquittal, cementing R.V. Parks as a landmark case in legal history. The ruling clarified that automatism, actions performed without conscious control, could be a valid defense, provided it wasn't tied to mental illness or intoxication. Kenneth's life after the trial was quiet but forever altered. He returned to his family, undergoing therapy to manage his parasomnia. Doctors prescribed medication and stress management techniques to prevent future episodes. He and Karen worked to rebuild their lives, though the shadow of that night lingered. Dennis Woods, who survived the attack, eventually forgave his son-in-law, a testament to the family's complex bond. But the loss of Barbara remained a wound that never fully healed. The case of Kenneth Parks raises questions that linger long after the verdict. Can someone truly act without awareness, their body moving like a puppet while their mind sleeps? Where do we draw the line between responsibility and involuntary action? For the courts, the answer was clear. Kenneth was not culpable, his actions the product of a brain caught in a rare and uncontrollable state. But for the public, the case remains a mystery, a puzzle that invites us to wonder about the hidden corners of our own minds. As you listen to this story, tucked into the safety of your bed, consider the strangeness of sleep. It's a realm we all enter nightly, a place where our bodies rest, but our minds can wander into uncharted territory. Kenneth Parks' story reminds us that even in our most vulnerable moments, the line between dream and reality can blur, leaving us to question what we're truly capable of. As the story of Kenneth Parks fades into the night, let the questions it raises drift away like a dream. You're safe, warm, and cozy, wrapped in the quiet of your own space. Thank you for joining us on True Crime Sleep Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend or leave us a review. It helps us keep these tales coming. Until next time, sleep well, sweet dreams, and good night.